This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yis Wu Heap. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Habre is accused of thousands of political killings, of systematic torture. The court sat for 3 months, heard testimony of mass killings, of ethnic cleansing, of massacres, of systematic torture. The court convicted Habre of crimes against humanity.
That's Reid Brody of the International Commission of Jurists. He is attending the appeal hearing for former Chadian president Hissène Habre in Dakar. Details coming up.
Also, authorities have shut down another radio station as the political crisis continues in the Gambia. And in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, tension between English and French speakers is running high.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Gambian authorities have shut down another radio station as the political crisis there continues. Paradise FM was taken off the air late yesterday, the fourth radio station to be closed this month. AFP reports one of the stations, Afri Radio, was allowed back on the air until the condition that it broadcast only music. The latest crackdown on the media comes as President Yahya Jammeh continues to reject the results of the December 1st president election. The Electoral Commission had declared opposition leader Adama Barrow the winner. He's scheduled to be sworn in on January 19th, but there are no signs at this time that Jammeh will step down. Jammeh is asking the country's Supreme Court to overturn the election results based on alleged irregularities. That hearing is now scheduled for tomorrow. However, reports say most of the judges who are foreign are not in the country. Jammeh has accused ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, of putting military forces on alert in the event he does not leave office. Meanwhile, Reuters reports Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is meeting with other West African leaders today on the situation in the Gambia.
In Dakar, Senegal, a court hearing is underway on an appeal to overturn the war crimes and crimes against humanity convictions of former Chadian president Hissène Habre. Habre was convicted last year and sentenced to life in prison. He is not in attendance today because he does not recognize the authority of the court. Among those observing the hearing is Reid Brody, a commissioner with the International Commission of Jurists. From Dakar, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa about Habre's attempt to get his conviction overturned.
Habre is saying first that one of the judges who sat on the trial court had been a prosecutor rather than a judge. And they're also contesting a number of pieces of evidence. And so the court is going to have to look at that and decide whether Habre got a fair trial and whether the evidence showed his guilt.
Give us a brief recap on his sentencing and for the crimes for which he was convicted.
Sure. Habre is accused of thousands of political killings, of systematic torture. The court sat for 3 months, heard testimony of mass killings, of ethnic cleansing, of massacres, of systematic torture. The court convicted Habre of crimes against humanity, torture, war crimes. They said that he personally raped one of the women who came and testified, Khadija Hassan. He was also convicted of having promoted sexual slavery, women who were deported to desert camps where they served as slaves for Hissène Habre's army. The evidence was very solid. Thousands of documents of Habre's own political police that really were a roadmap to how the repression was carried out, which listed names of 1,208 separate victims who died in Hissène Habre's jails. There were testimony from people who worked for Habre and received orders from him. There were documents that were written by Hissène Habre himself, order from Habre, for instance, not to let prisoners of war leave prison to go to the hospital. Very, very solid evidence. And it's hard to imagine that the court, sitting not as a trial court, but just reviewing whether the law was correctly applied, it's hard to imagine that the appeals court is going to overturn all of that evidence.
How long will this hearing last?
We believe it's going to last for 2 or 3 days. It's basically legal arguments by the prosecutor, by Habre's defense lawyers, and of course by the victim's lawyers, who are parties to the case, as they should be, because this case really came to court because of a 25-year campaign by prison survivors, by the families of victims, who fought really with tenacity and perseverance for this trial to happen, and who are represented here by Chadian lawyers. And they have also appealed the judgment. Habre was condemned to life imprisonment. He was also ordered to pay about $100 million in reparations. And what the victims are asking for is that there be a fund set up, because that money has not been identified or seized. And the victims would like to see a fund set up to oversee the search for Habre's assets and then the administration of any monies that are collected.
Now, can this particular court set up such a fund?
Yes. Actually, the statute of the court provides for a fund to be set up. It has not yet been set up, though, and the African Union has agreed in principle to set up this fund, but it has not been established. And the victims are asking the court to essentially say that any monies collected from Habre should be put in this fund.
Now, when might we expect a decision in this case?
Probably at the end of April. And that's another interesting aspect of this trial. It has been a very effective and efficient process. This court has a timetable. The entire process from beginning to end has cost about $11 million, which sounds like a lot, but when you see that the court in Sierra Leone that was set up and that convicted Charles Taylor cost 30 times that much, that the International Criminal Court cost hundreds of times that much, the investigation and the prosecution of a former dictator in another country, although it took the victims a very long time to get to this point, the proceedings itself took only a few years and cost a fraction of what international tribunals usually cost. So this court has until the end of April to render its decision. So that's when we're expecting it to come down.
Now, if the guilty verdicts are upheld against Mr. Habre, where will he serve his time?
Well, he's already in prison here in Dakar, and under the tribunal statute, he could serve his sentence either here in Senegal or in any country of the African Union. It's expected that he would serve his sentence here in Senegal.
Did he actually show up in court today?
No. Hissène Habré, it should be said, does not recognize the legitimacy of the tribunal. He considers it to be politically motivated, and it doesn't have jurisdiction over him. And he did not want to come to the trial. He was actually brought in by force each day to the trial. This is appeal on the law, and so Hissène Habré has not been ordered to come to court here today.
Reed Brody is a commissioner with the International Commission of Jurists from Dakar. He spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Streets were empty today in the Cameroonian city of Bamenda as residents honored a call to strike over the increasing use of French in English-speaking parts of the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the latest from the capital, Yaoundé, where tension between English and French speakers is running high.
A client and her attorney argue outside a courthouse in Bamenda as bystanders listen in. The client, Ashu Georgette, wants her lawyer to defend her in court after she was accused of illegally occupying a piece of land she inherited from her father. But the attorney refuses, citing the ongoing strike by Cameroon's English-speaking lawyers. Georgette is not happy.
As we speak now, somebody is constructing on the land, and I don't have any power to stop him. I've been waiting for the court to render justice, but my lawyer doesn't come.
Lawyers in the English-speaking southwest and northwest regions of Cameroon called the strike in September to protest what they called the overbearing use of the French language. English speakers constitute 20% of Cameroon's population, and the Constitution says English and French inherited from colonial times are equally important. But most official documents are only in French, and judges, administrators, and teachers with little understanding of English are often sent to work in English-speaking regions. The lawyers have been joined by teachers and supported by young people. Protests in November led to clashes with the military that left several people dead, hundreds missing or wounded, and scores under arrest. The government opened up negotiations, but the striking teachers and lawyers stormed out. The leader of the striking lawyers, Bobga Harmony, says they will resume talks once authorities release youths who were arrested for burning police stations, vehicles, and Cameroon's national flag during the protests.
We maintain our disposition as civilized, learned men to dialogue. And dialogue doesn't mean you are giving up your position. You simply market your position to the understanding of the other side. And any reasonable other side who seeks peace will buy it rather than accuse infants of terrorism in a situation where that word has no place.
Harmony says the whereabouts of some of the arrested protesters is not known. Rights activists like Joseph Chongsi of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Advocacy have called on officials to reveal where the protesters are being held.
Cameroon government should without delay set up an independent and impartial investigation commission, ensure thorough, prompt, effective and impartial investigation of all suspected cases of death, especially those in custody.
In an address on December 31, President Paul Biya said he was open to talks with the protesters, but warned he will never accept any attempt to destabilize what he called Cameroon's hard-earned national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
17 minutes past the hour, this is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Italy's Interior Minister Marco Minniti is in Libya today. He's trying to work out a deal with the Libyan government to stop the flow of migrants into Italy. However, questions remain regarding instability in the country. In addition, Pope Francis said today that nations should not close their doors to asylum seekers, while adding that he acknowledged the need for governments to be prudent. Reporter Josephine McKenna is in Rome following developments. She spoke with me about details of the Italian proposal and what it would mean for asylum seekers.
The Interior Minister Marco Minniti is in Libya on behalf of the Italian government, looking for a new accord to try and stop the flow of migrants coming into Italy, and also to look at steps that may help to increase the number of expulsions of illegal immigrants. Now, one of the Italian daily newspapers, Il Messaggero, says the Italian government is prepared to offer up to 5 billion euros in a kind of investment in Libyan security services and trying to improve the state of the Libyan Coast Guard to try and increase these security measures. That seems like a tall order because last year we had more than 180,000 migrants arrive in Italy by sea. That's a record, and the number is really not slowing down. So that is the priority for the Italian government. The minister is there meeting the Prime Minister, Faraz al-Sarraj, and is hoping to come up with some sort of accord. But don't forget that this country, Libya, is quite divided. The government doesn't have full control of the country. There is still widespread lawlessness. So it's a tall order for Italy and other European countries to try and stop the flow of migrants at this point.
What is the anticipated reaction to this proposal, considering what you just said in terms of the state of Libya right now?
The Italian government wants Europe to recognize that money is needed, an investment is required in North Africa, the same as they have invested in Turkey to try and support services on the ground to try and stop the flow of migrants. That seems to be an ambitious call at this point, even though the Italian government's under pressure domestically to do something to stop the high number of migrants arriving here. So pressure to try and reach some agreement, but still a very ambitious task at this point. Essentially, the Italian government wants to put in place a deal that was negotiated by the former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, but has never been realised because of the war and the conflict inside Libya.
What has been the reaction so far to the actual people who are trying to flee Africa and head into Europe? Are there concerns that they may be mistreated?
We're seeing a reaction in Italy from communities that are really struggling to create work, to create enough jobs, particularly for young people. New unemployment figures were released today. They're on the rise in Italy, up to 40% of young people are unemployed in Italy. So many small communities feel that there simply are not enough jobs. The migrant centres are also overloaded, and we've seen some reaction. We had a couple of riots last week in different migrant centres in Verona and outside Venice. People are being crammed in there, and they're worried that the conditions are not good enough to house the number of migrants who are coming. So we're seeing more pressure on the Italian government to step up controls and to step up repatriation of illegal immigrants. And that's going to increase later in 2017 because we have elections coming up in France, Germany, and possibly in Italy as well.
Pope Francis today talked about this situation and says that the nations should not close their doors to asylum seekers.
Pope Francis gave an address to the Vatican diplomatic corps, the ambassadors and other diplomats at the Vatican, and he acknowledged the need for governments to be prudent, particularly because of their concerns about fundamentalists and terrorism. But he said that didn't mean that governments should be closing their doors, and he's encouraging the authorities in various countries to receive migrants in need and to really keep those doors open. He also thanked countries that were supporting those in difficulty and helping to support the humanitarian crisis. He thanked Italy, Germany, Greece, and Sweden for what they have done to assist migrants and encouraged other countries to really keep their doors open and try and welcome those people who are fleeing conflict and poverty.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai reportedly has asked several African leaders to help ease his country's economic crisis. Harare News Day Online reports Tsvangirai made the request over the weekend at the inauguration of Ghana's new president, Nana Nanakwa Akufo-Addo. Zimbabwe is in the midst of a cash crisis and high unemployment. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports President Robert Mugabe arrived in Beijing today to meet with Chinese leaders. China is one of the largest investors in Zimbabwe in such areas as mining and infrastructure.
The ex-wife of South African President Jacob Zuma has received some powerful support to be the next leader of the ruling African National Congress Party. Reuters reports the ANC's Women's League has endorsed Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, the current chairperson of the African Union. The ruling party will pick a new leader in December. Whoever is chosen is likely to be South Africa's next president, considering the majority the ANC now holds. Dlamini Zuma is the former health minister in South Africa. Critics say she should have done more to fight the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the country. Another strong candidate for ANC leader is wealthy businessman Cyril Ramaphosa.
An attack at an Egyptian police checkpoint in the Sinai town of El Arish killed at least 8 people today. However, security officials say they stopped a truck bomb from exploding. Egypt's Interior Ministry says five attackers were killed after they rammed a stolen garbage truck into the security checkpoint. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but a Sunni insurgency linked to the Islamic State has been active in the region. It's blamed for the deaths of hundreds of Egyptian security forces since the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood 3 years ago.
Scientists are investigating new ways of treating people with liver cancer. The methods range from developing an artificial liver to seeing if genetically modified pigs can produce organs compatible with humans. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on yet another approach being taken at the University of Missouri.
For those who have liver cancer, their only cure lies in a liver transplant or removal of the cancerous part of the organ. Both require major surgery, and patients who get a transplant will need to take immunosuppressant drugs for the rest of their lives. However, scientists are working on a new approach that is minimally invasive. With both chemotherapy and radiation, healthy cells around the tumor are damaged. But this approach involves the use of natural, non-toxic chemical compounds from plants. Katesh Kati, a professor at the University of Missouri School of Medicine, led a study that used nanotechnology to target and destroy precancerous tumor cells in the livers of mice and in vitro human cells.
It sounds like a fairy tale, but we are really in advanced stages in terms of tumor treatment, in terms of disease diagnostics.
Kati's work involved very small particles of gold encapsulated in a protective stabilizer from an acacia tree. The particles attract precancerous and malignant cells, which are far more susceptible to lower levels of heat than healthy cells.
The patient would be administered with these nanoparticles. Within a couple of hours, the patient would be treated with lasers, and then the patient can go home. So there is no radioactivity. There is no toxic waste. There is no systemic toxicity to the patient.
Kati says the cost of treatment will be low because 1 gram of gold can be used to treat 50 patients. And what's more, Kati says this type of treatment could be used for other types of cancer, for arthritis and other debilitating diseases. The next step is a clinical trial in humans. Should this technique work, it will be good news for the nearly 800,000 people who are diagnosed with liver cancer each year, and it could help save the lives of some 700,000 people who die each year from the disease. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou will discuss New Year's resolution, how to stay motivated and take some important prevention steps for good health in 2017. With guest Dr. Paul Jani Edo, Head of Clinical Services, Kosawa Polyclinic in Ghana. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
on the next Straight Talk Africa. A discussion on the challenges of political transitions in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Gambia, to name a few. Right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.